It's Living Inspired. And now, here's your host, Tricia Goyer.
Let me tell you a little bit about today's guest. And she's been a guest here before, and I just love her books. I love her message, and I love how she seasons everything with humor. And it really just helps open up this concept of fears. And the title of the book is Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate. And my guest is Deborah Cody. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's so great to have you here, and I love what you say. I'm going to read this quote real quick. It says, fear is really about losing control. We can easily fool ourselves into thinking we're doing the responsible thing by worrying. When we worry, we're desperately trying to maintain control. And when I read that, I'm like, oh, that is so true. We want to control everything around us, and then that's when those fears crop up. Why did you decide that this is the book you wanted to write at this time?
Well, I've been writing women's issue books for quite a while now. This is actually the third book in a series called Take On Life that I'm writing about different issues that seem to have crept up when I travel for speaking engagements.
Yeah.
I keep hearing recurring themes that women are really struggling with. And the first one was stress, and I talked about that and Too Blessed to Be Stressed. And the second was self-control issues. I have a little problem with that, too.
Yes.
And so that was the theme of my book, More Beauty, Less Beast. And then this is the third one. And fear just seems to be something that seems to control some of us. And I just felt that it was time to approach a serious topic like fear through the back door of women's hearts, into the kitchen of their hearts instead of the formal living room, so we can kick off our shoes and sip our chai tea lattes and, you know, get real with each other and try to tackle some of these really tough issues.
I love that. And I love that, you know, it's not, I mean, you think about a book on fear, it's like, oh, this is going to be so stressful to read. But you've done it in such a beautiful way. I just love it. It's just done beautifully.
So
I just wanted to let you know that. But what I also loved is that before you even started writing, you had a survey of 500 women to ask them about their fears. And I think this is so smart. It sounds like a big undertaking, but what did you learn as you talked to these women?
Well, I learned that I had my preconceived ideas that I didn't really realize I had, and I was wrong. I think I was basing what I expected to find out from this survey of 500 random women from the ages of 18 to 80. I was basing what I projected would be the results from my own personal fears, and a couple of mine were right in there, but I was really surprised at how they turned out. Would you like me to share with you some of the top 10 fears?
Yeah, I would love it.
Well, what would you guess the first one would be? The number one biggest fear that women seem to have struggled with of all age groups. This was across the board from 18 to 80, and it was so far ahead of the rest of the pack, it more than doubled the number two fear.
You know, I think it would definitely be either losing like a spouse or someone you love.
Exactly. It really is. It's the loss.
Yeah.
And I think that's tied in with fear of loneliness as well. But loss of, and we had so many people write in different losses that we combined it into loss of a spouse, a child, or a parent.
Right.
And that was the number one. And then the number two was debilitating disease or terminal illness. And that was pretty much predominant in the older age categories. I had it divided into three age groups. And that was the lead one and the older ones, and then in the younger age category, it was failure, fear of failure.
Wow.
And I think that makes sense because women, and that was the 18 to 29-year group, and they were starting out their careers and motherhood and life, and they just, you know, they want to make sure that they're not messing up and, you know, turning out a whole bunch of little, you know, mass murderers as children.
We want to do everything right at that age. Totally.
Exactly. And a lot of what we do is motivated by fear at that age.
Wow. And so what were some of the other ones? You don't have to go through all of them, but were there any that really surprised you?
Well, number four was fear of old age and senility, and I'm slipping, you know, I'm kind of getting into that, and I noticed that as you cross that magical half-century age, people start really focusing on that. That particular fear is in your face, you know,
right.
and you're worried that it's going to happen to you. And number five was the one that I struggle with most personally, and it's the fear of the unknown or the what ifs. And those what-ifs, they just wreck me over the coals. They're the ones that I lay awake at night, and I guess I have a really good imagination. I can sculpt face on that faceless fear that it has no face, but I can give it a cavernous mouth and piercing eyes, and you know, I can make it a monster, and that's what I call some of these fears. They are fear monsters.
And you know, they just hold us back so much. You know, you're talking about number three, failure, and we talked about, you know, just, I remember being a young mom, I honestly would pray, Lord, just let me do everything perfect. I just want to do everything perfect. But it also reminded me of a time when I went to a Christmas party with my husband, and someone had mentioned that I had written a book, and the lady says, oh, I've written three books. And so I said, oh, you know, what have you written? And this was, you know, 15 years ago, and she said, well, I wrote three children's novels, but they're in the desk drawer, and I'm afraid to send them out because I don't want rejection. And they've been sitting there for 10 years.
Wow.
I thought, you know, so many times, I mean, God has so much planned for us, but, you know, we're so afraid of failure. We're so afraid to step out. So that one, I think, really can probably resonate with a lot of my listeners.
Oh, that is so true. And I think that's the thing about fear. It's not a bad thing. God created it as a good thing. You know, He created it to keep us out of trouble, basically. And, you know, it's when we let it turn into a monster. You know, if we didn't have fear, we would not be motivated half the time. We would not be moving forward. We would be making all kinds of mistakes. But fear sometimes saves us from ourselves. An example, if we didn't have that little fear of failure, we wouldn't go to class, and we would have never finished high school.
Right. Exactly.
If we didn't fear that C word invading our bodies, we wouldn't faithfully squash our bosom buddies flat with mammograms.
Right.
You know, so we need to have a little fear, but it's when it becomes controlling that it debilitates.
Mm.
When it evolves from an emotion to a paradigm, which is coloring our entire worldview, that's when it alters the course from the splendid women that Papa God intended us to be, and it makes us settle for a wimpy, whiny imitation.
I mean, that is so powerful, just thinking about that. And it makes me realize, okay, you're talking about Papa God, and I love that reference. And I know when my kids are afraid of something, I'm just like, come on, it'll be so fun. You know, I want them to sit on my lap when we're going on the slide. Or, I mean, and they're so afraid, and I just know they're going to love it. And, I mean, don't you think that God looks down at us and saying, I have this under control. I have this.
I really do. And, you know, you just hammered that nail on the head of what the underlying basis is the control issue.
Mm.
And I think deep down inside, we want to believe that Papa God's inside, in control. But I think that somewhere down deep, that's the basis for most of our fears. We don't want to let go of what we think we're in control of certain things. And we don't trust that Papa God is in control. And we're afraid that if we don't maintain control of the things in our lives like our fears, that keep our fears at bay, that maybe He won't follow through. And just maybe we're going to lose everything we have. That's one of the big points in the book that I cover in Fear of Financial Ruin. You know, that's a hard thing. And many, many of us in our economy in this day, are struggling with that, and they have fear of going through the valley of the shadow of financial death, and
right.
They have a hard time not clutching all of their possessions to their chest, afraid that they might lose one molecule, because deep down inside, you know, they're just afraid that Papa God's not going to pull through.
Absolutely. You know, I, as you're saying that, I'm thinking of some of the fears in my life, and one of them was, you know, I had an abortion when I was 15, and so afraid that people would find out. And, you know, I was just ashamed of it. I had given my heart to the Lord later. You know, I'd be sitting in church thinking, if they knew, they would hate me. If they knew, they would hate me. And that fear just held me back from relationships. It held me back, you know, from getting a closer relationship with my husband and my kids. But, you know, once I was able to release that and turn it over to God and share my darkest pain with others, the freedom that came. And I know that's the other side of this fear, is the freedom.
So
talk a little bit about what your encouragement is to women that maybe, you know, I could hear people on the other side of this radio going, okay, I knew I had these fears. What can I do? Can you talk a little bit about that freedom?
Well, I think that one thing we need to realize is that our fears spotlight what matters to us most. Those are the hidden corners of our life in which we trust Papa God least. And we need to pay attention to those fears because they're actually there for a reason. You know, I talk in the book about the vultures that hang out over our shoulders, that loiter around stalking us. I'm talking about the spiritual predators that are waiting for us to let them in and let them pick the bones of our mistakes and our failures. And it just feeds them and keeps them around. I came to that analogy actually literally. I like to take prayer walks around my neighborhood. And one of my neighbors...
And Deborah, I'm actually going to have to let you finish that story later because we're going to have to go to break. So I want to break here, but I want to pick up right with this analogy when we come back.
Sure.
Again, I'm talking to Deborah Cody. We're talking about faith, fear, and a fistful of chocolate. And we'll be back in just a moment on Living Inspired. Welcome back to Living Inspired. I'm Tricia Goyer, and I'm talking to Deborah Cody. And you can find out more about Deborah and her books at Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A, Cody, C-O-T-Y, .com. She's the author of 10 books. Some of her other ones are Too Blessed to Be Stressed and More Beauty, Less Beast. And Deborah, right before the break, you were talking about those vultures. Those vultures that swoop into our lives. And go ahead and pick up the story that you were talking about right before the break.
Well, I like to do prayer walks. That's also one of my tools to cope with the worries and anxiety is to take a prayer walk to remove yourself from the presence of the fear. So anyway, I was walking around my neighborhood one day, and I noticed down by the lake that one of my neighbors has a vulture infestation.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was incredible. These huge, ugly, hulking, nasty, beaked, sharp, awful things, creatures, were all lined up on his roof. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, what are they doing here? And then I thought, well, they're only here because they're well-fed. If they weren't getting something to eat, they would leave. And, you know, vultures are carnivores. They eat dead things. And I started thinking about that related to my own life. You know, I feed the vultures, the spiritual vultures, in my life with all of the dead things that I discard, all the dreams that were broken, all the good intentions that never came to anything. I keep them well fed. And so they hang out, lurking, loitering over my head, waiting to attack. And I thought, well, how do we get rid of these things?
Right.
They're very scary. And the answer came with the physical vultures. As I started to cross the lawn of my neighbors to get closer to snap a picture of the vultures for my blog, they first would kind of spread their huge wingspans out, try to look really big and scream at me and look really menacing and ugly. And when it didn't work, when I just kept progressing forward, they finally would fly away. And I thought, that's it. That's the way we get rid of our spiritual vultures as well, because we have access to the most powerful life force there is, and that's Papa God, and they can't remain in his presence. They are totally intimidated, overwhelmed, outclassed. They are just out of there when the presence of Papa God is there, and that's what we have to do.
We need to welcome him into the situation. And, you know, the thing is that he knows that we'll have these fears. You talk about in the book that fear not is the most repeated command in the entire Bible. God knows we will fear, but that's why he wants to be there. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I think, you know, they say fear not is the phrase that's repeated 365 times in the Bible, and I don't think that's coincidental.
Yeah,
that's the
exactly.
Same number of days in the year, you know, and I think that it's there because we just are not picking up what Papa God's putting down. I kind of think of it as the same reason that we remind our children every single day of their life to eat their vegetables for 18 years. We say it over and over because we know it's the best thing for them and that they really, really, really need to embrace this as a personal habit because they could live without vegetables. But as loving parents, we see the bigger picture.
Right.
And we know that strengthening and fortifying their bodies with the vitamins in those veggies is very important for them. And Papa God sees it the same way. He keeps reminding us over and over to fear not, because we can go on existing with fear, and many of us do, but it is not in our own best interest. It is not healthy for us, and it is certainly not the abundant life he offers to believers in John 10:10.
Right, absolutely. You know, and I mean, I'm thinking about my own fears as I talk about this, but I'd love to hear a practical application. And so many times, you know, we could talk about these concepts and people say, I don't understand though. How can it happen for me? So do you have a fear maybe that God has helped you overcome that you just bring it home for our listeners today?
Well, I'll talk a little bit about, I have personal fears for myself, yes, and I do talk about them in the book, but one that's very, very powerful that I would share with your listeners is about Philip. He's a fellow in my book who is extremely fearful of failure, and he's become a perfectionist in his life, and it started in his childhood, as so many of our fears do, and that is I talk about that a lot when I mention the different types of fears. I kind of have them in five categories, all beginning with the letter S to make them easier to remember. There's a spurting fear, there's a savory fear, there's a saturating fear, a simmering fear, and a sovereign fear. Mm-hmm. And Phillips is more like the saturating fear. It's a kind of invasive fear that originates in childhood, and it permeates our lives in ways we don't always see. And I think these kind of fears can often become manifested as adults in phobias, and they're enmeshed in our personalities. An example of that would be maybe seeing your neighbor's dog and suddenly feeling panic because you were bitten as a child, or fear of abandonment that pervades your adult relationships because your father left when you were little. And that's kind of what part of Philip's problem was. And I go into detail with him. He's actually a very good friend of mine in the book. Well, he's in real life. He's a good friend of mine. But he was gracious enough to let me use his story in the book. And I tell about how when he was growing up, his father left when he was 2, and he didn't ever know his father. The only other time he saw his father was when Philip was about 10, and he was going to a family funeral. And he had seen pictures of his dad, so he knew what he looked like. And he saw this man that he knew was his dad starting to walk into the funeral home. And the minute the man saw Philip, he stopped cold, turned his back, and left. And that is just fear of, you know, rejection. That, you know, how can you, anybody be more rejected than that? And Philip today talks about how that is why he is such a perfectionist, because he feels he can never quite measure up, and that if he is just perfect, if he does everything above and beyond, that people will then accept him and respect him. And that is, he feels underneath it all is the only way he can get that acceptance and respect. And it has governed his life. It has changed his whole, you know, people have a difficult time sometimes with him, his family, his children, because he has these same ridiculously high standards for everyone else.
Right.
He's a supervisor at work, and the same thing. He just can't tolerate people who can't live up to his very, very, very high bar. And, you know, he has turned to the Lord over and over, and the Lord has really helped him see some insight into why he's the way he is and what he can do about it. And I would highly recommend people who have a problem with perfectionism, and I know quite a few people do, to check out that story in the book.
Yeah, so what encouragement? I mean, you know, you're writing about this, and there's people that may be struggling with the same thing. Do you have just some encouragement that they can just grasp from listening to this?
Well, I hope so. I know worry is something that we all tend to do a lot of, because we see our moms worry, we see our grandmoms worry, and we don't know there's any other way. And we're just so used to worrying. And a couple of tools that I've used myself, I use them all the time, that really, really help, that I suggest about how to dissolve a worry wart is, I mean, really, who wants to be a wart? you know, is to set aside worry and to postpone worry into a time called, I call it your DWT, your designated worry time. Set aside 15 minutes a day. And when you have a worry otherwise during the day, because if you don't jot it down, get rid of it, you're going to stew on it, and it's going to bother you. It's going to just mess with your mind all day long. If you jot it down, set it aside for your designated worry time, then you can forget about it. And then when that DWT rolls around, you pull out your little pad that you've jotted your worries on, and then you divide them into two piles. One pile is the outcomes over which you have no control, and the other pile is potentially solvable problems. And then you turn your back on those outcomes which you have no control. You pray about them. You give them to Papa God, and then you focus on the potentially solvable problems. And that way you have set parameters so that your worries and your fears are not controlling you. They are not determining your actions and your thoughts. You are in control of them. And Papa God has to take the ones that you can't do a thing about and then morph that worry into prayer. Because fretting is not productive, but prayer is. Prayer is the nerve that innervates the muscles in the hand of God, and that's what we have to remember. Worrying, just it's just like chewing gristle. An old yucky piece of meat that you just chew and chew and chew, and you can't ever swallow it. But, you know, prayer will actually do something about it.
I love that. Now, do you have any scripture verses that maybe someone can look up and jot down and write down and carry with them that has to do with overcoming fear?
Oh, absolutely. I have just tons and tons of them sprinkled throughout the book. My favorite and the one that the book is dedicated to is Psalm 34:4. I sought the Lord, and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. And then another one that's very, very important is 2 Timothy 1:7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and discipline. And that's one of my main points of the book, is that we need to turn in our fears at heaven's, you know, counter, and we need to turn that in and get instead some gifts that we can actually use, power and love and self-discipline. And Papa's ready to do that for us. We just need a few tools to know how to get there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I loved your S's that you talked about, the fears, the spurting fear, the savory fear, the saturating fear, and the simmering fear. But, you know, I want to go to the last one, the sovereign fear, the fear of God, because the Bible does talk about a fear of God. And so many times I've been in Bible studies where people are like, I don't understand what that means. So there may be someone out there that's saying the same thing, that, you know, that sovereign fear of God, are we supposed to, like, hover under our beds fearful of him? Why don't you explain a little bit about that?
Well, that type of fear is not talking about those sphincter pucker moments type of fear that we have otherwise. But the sovereign fear is born of respect, and that is the subjection that we willingly place ourselves under to authorities like parents and teachers, and of course Papa God. And you know, the Bible says hundreds of times to fear God, and it's, if you read the scriptures that say that, you'll realize it's not talking about your liver quivers and, you know, you're turning pale and you're sweat breaking out on your forehead type of fear. It's talking about the respectful fear, the kind of fear that makes us listen. You know, it's a good kind of fear.
Absolutely. You know, and when we fear God and we know who he is, I think that helps wipe out so many other fears. And unfortunately, we're out of time. This went by so quick, and you're so helpful. And I know that you really encouraged the listeners today. I want that, to encourage them to pick up the book. It's called Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate. Again, the author is Deborah Cody, and you can find out more about her at DeborahCody.com. Thank you so much, Deborah, for being here today.
Thank you so much. And one last line, it's not over until you win when it comes to fear.
I love that. Thank you.